What are the four most important things about marketing that you need to be thinking about right now? That's on tap for today. I'm Chris Manley. This is the Ingenious Podcast. Welcome to the Ingenious Podcast. Good to have you along with us. So today marks a little bit of a milestone for us because after today, we're going to be taking a little bit of a hiatus as we head into the end of 2022 and the start of 2023 with our podcast. So as we thought about content for today, what we want to leave our listeners with is what are the four most important things that you need to be thinking about with your marketing? And when we put this together, we, you know, my first instinct was these feel very basic. But at the same time, I think I've seen so many businesses that get in the weeds of stuff and really get going with stuff and start making progress with their marketing, and they forget one or more of these. And so, yes, they're basic, but we want to make sure that you've got these close at hand, that you're keeping track of them, you're focused on them, really so that you can be more successful in the year ahead. Joining me today is Corey Radford. Corey, welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Chris.
Okay, so we've got these four different things to unpack a little bit. These are the four most important things that we've identified are things that every business needs to be thinking about with their marketing. Corey, what's the first one?
Know thy audience.
I cannot tell you the number of businesses I talk to where I ask, who is your audience? And I kind of get this, you know, the first reaction is this look of fear of like, oh my gosh, like, who is my audience? Like, do I really know this group? Do I really know these people?
Do you? That's a great question. It's got to be data driven when we're trying to answer this question. And man, we're in a world where there's a lot of data. So yeah. Great news.
Yeah. And I mean, that data is actually super helpful because, I mean, if you think about it, 50 years ago, if somebody really wanted to know their audience, there's very little data tracking that's available for that. I mean, if you've ever been related to the TV industry or followed anything about television shows, you know, you've heard about Nielsen ratings. I mean, that was the only way to get data is, and it's why they had Sweeps Week, where, you know, the best shows always came on that week and they always did something special. They had guest stars. They were just trying to get people to show up so that they could show that more people interacted with that program. They came out with some demographic information that helped advertisers know where to go with stuff. But that was a once a season kind of thing. You got, you know, Nielsen rating reports twice a year, and that's all you had. Today, we have so much data on our audience and really understanding them that we can, you know, really get underneath the hood. We can really understand who this group is and actually back that up with data, not just an assumption.
Yeah, and it's even a question that I would encourage people to ask more than they think is necessary because consumer habits change. And just because you were able to answer this question 5 years ago, I got news for you. It's going to be a lot different today than it was then. So it's something that needs to be asked quite often as technology and again, consumer habits change.
Yeah, it does change over time. And that's because people change over time. We don't stay the same. We have different preferences. As we get older, we think about things differently. We prioritize things differently. And that's what's happening with your audience. You got to make sure you're staying in tune with where is your audience today? What do they value? What do they care about? You know, what really motivates them and gets them out of bed in the morning? You want to know as much about that audience as you can because you're trying to communicate to them. You know, and you're obviously trying to communicate to them in a way that leads them to your brand, leads them to your specific product or service. But to do that, you've got to understand them really well. The words you speak have to connect with that person. And if they don't, our patience level is lower than ever. The availability of other brands is so high. You know, it's so easy just to go somewhere else for it. If you don't connect with, you know, the first one that you try out, it takes about 3 seconds to go find another one.
Yeah, actually, I saw a stat the other day that it was in less than half a second of somebody visiting your site for the first time, they are making or forming an opinion about your brand solely based on your website's design. And so that little data point speaks to, you're right, the lack of patience people have, because if that's not a great impression, they probably aren't going to give you very many additional seconds for you to make any kind of case to them about anything. They're going to leave.
Yeah. And so we'll get to websites in a second because we want to talk about that too. But I want to touch on one more thing before we leave talking about the audience is you've got to be really, really careful to understand what are your assumptions. your assumptions either have to be proven or unproven, which means essentially you never end up with any assumptions. You may have a hypothesis that you start with, but you're either proving it or you're unproving it. You're figuring out whether or not you can rely on it. Otherwise, you know, there's that old adage that my producer told me we can't use the actual word here, but it's like, you know, if you assume things, it makes a donkey out of you know, me and you, right?
Yeah, don't want to do that. Got to know what assumptions you're making and try to find data to back up everything you've got.
Yeah. And so when you start thinking about your audience, you start trying to understand your audience, you will naturally have some assumptions you make. You have to write assumption or whatever you want to put in front of that. I can think of a three-letter acronym that you could use right there. But you know, you got to put something in front of that that makes you stop and think, hey, do I have any data to actually prove or disprove that assumption? And if you don't, try to find it. Otherwise, you need to acknowledge that is an assumption you are making, not a fact about your audience. You know, when you want to understand your audience, use data. Don't just go off of what historically it has been, because just because it has been doesn't mean it still will be. You know, coming out of the pandemic, we know that people are acting totally differently from a buying standpoint than they used to. It's changed so much about people's buying habits and how they buy products and services. I don't know that we'll ever go back to the way it was in 2019 and prior. You gotta know what that audience is thinking now, not what they thought historically, and not what you're guessing they think. You wanna dig in and get a little bit more detailed. And what I'm saying is, you know, this detail about your audience and understanding them. Sure, you can pay money to have people study your audience. You can have a market firm do focus groups and things like that to really study your audience. A lot of our listeners are small businesses that you may not have that kind of level of financial resources to really dig in or even be able to justify that. Just simply having an analytics account on your website tells you so much about who's going to your site, who's interacting with your brand, that you don't have to spend a ton of money to really understand that. You can do it on a budget and get some pretty decent data on what's happening there. It's just important to make sure that you are digging into that data. Really seek to know your audience, dive in and note whatever assumptions you have and either prove them or disprove them. Don't let them just hang around and really guide the future of your strategy, because you might be right, you might be wrong. It's better to be sure.
You got it. I think that takes us on to point number two. Now that we talked about knowing your audience, which as we've talked about here, Chris, number two is having a solid web presence.
Yeah. You said it earlier as we were talking about the audience with your website. People will go to your website no matter how they find you. I've talked to business owners before that said, yeah, we get 80% of our business through word of mouth. Well, do you know that over 90% of people, when they're referred to someone through word of mouth, even when it's a trusted friend or colleague, the first thing they will do is go on a website and they will make a decision within a matter of milliseconds about whether or not they're going to do business with that brand. And I've told people that statistic, and they look at me funny sometimes because it's just in disbelief that really happens. And what's funny is that's actually how they act as well. That's how we all act. It's just kind of funny to think about sometimes that we're literally making that decision instantaneously as soon as we see the web presence. You know, it's why, I mean, we advise people that, I mean, even if you're starting up and money's tight, you know, and you need to scale down the site that you're putting together, make sure that it is a professional presence. It doesn't look like, you know, somebody made it in their basement in 30 minutes on some kind of internet web builder. If you need to portray a professional brand to reach your audience, it has to be a professional web presence. In addition to making sure that your website is connecting with your audience, that it does have that professional feel, you know, there's also a level of just having a solid web presence and making sure that it's secure. Because if it's not, that can really eliminate trust in your brand and really degrade trust in your brand. Corey, I know you work with a lot of clients. You've kind of seen times when this has happened, you know, where they're not working with a professional group with a website, and it really has opened them up to a lot of concerns.
Yeah, I guess when we say solid web presence, I automatically think of not only from a design standpoint and messaging standpoint, but just the technology standpoint. Yeah, I can think of several instances that you're right, because somebody took probably not a professional avenue to build a site or to put something together like that, that yeah, it's ended up in the site getting hacked and content being on the site that's not theirs, or even like warnings that would pop up, basically them losing control. And man, that's in my mind, I think most people think of that. I think of that. And most people think of that as like a worst case scenario, but that happens more often than people would think. And yeah, it only takes one time of that happening that you lose control of it. You're right that your credibility is pretty much shot.
The other thing about your web presence and really why it's so important to have a solid web presence is I want you to think about your website as the hub of all of your marketing and communication. You know, and that's and even your sales efforts to an extent. This is the place where people go to interact with you. It's the place where they go to understand your brand, to learn more about your brand, to figure out whether or not they're a fit to work with your brand. It's no matter how they hear about you, whether it's a billboard, whether it's word of mouth, whether it's a radio ad, whether it's an ad on Facebook, no matter what it is, this is the first place that people go. And consumers are discerning these days, but it's also just so easy to access. You don't have to have a super discerning consumer for them to click on the link to your website and check you out really quick. They can do that in 10 seconds. You know, I mean, and then make a buying decision based on that. It is your hub. It is where everybody's coming to. And so if you're going to invest money in any kind of marketing and your website is second class or not communicating well or not really designed well even or not secure, it's going to come back to bite you. It's really going to diminish the return that you're going to get from other marketing efforts that you're trying to do. Okay, well, those are the first two. We're going to tackle the second two once we come back after the break. We'll be back in a moment.
Thanks for listening to the Ingenious Podcast. We are a digital marketing agency helping clients connect with customers and develop business through strategic web design and tailored digital marketing services. Every business is unique, so we listen first to prescribe online marketing solutions developed for businesses. For proof of how we can improve your online presence and for more information on Ingenious, visit WePowerYourBusiness.com.
And we're back. So we've been talking through the four most important things that we would advise anybody to think about and really wrestle with and make sure you're paying attention to when it comes to your marketing. They're what we call the fantastic four of marketing, things you've got to consider, you've got to spend some time on. So we've talked to the first two. We're in the back half now. And Corey, what is number three?
Yeah, number three is answering the question of how you are tracking your return.
What does that mean? What is return?
It's basically the concept of having some sort of method of measuring and tracking how you're making sales, how you're getting leads, the avenues of which those are coming to you. So really you can be in a position to move that dial when things have slowed down to increase sales or back it off if you get really busy.
Yeah. What are some of the ways that, I mean, we say tracking, you know, tracking your return and kind of knowing what that is. I mean, that sounds like it has to be super, super complicated and probably really expensive to set up. Is that the case or is there, I mean, are there kind of budget options to doing that if you're not a multi-million dollar corporation?
Yeah, I think the options really actually do run the gamut. On the more like sophisticated side, you could track people's IP address that would really give you an idea about where all their how all they're interacting with your brand and where on your site they're going and how they're engaging from session to session. On the lower end of that, I mean, I've seen people with a simple spreadsheet that they're tracking when people call in and the name of the person and then asking them when they call in over the phone where they came from. So you just got to have some avenue to capture that information really to be able to tell whether your marketing is actionable or whether it's really working or not.
Yeah, it's been a while now, but I remember actually talking with a business owner of a small retail shop. Gosh, this was at least 10 years ago now. And they literally had, you know, those old Steno notepads. I know we're all virtual these days and we have all our notes on our phone, and our computer. But like, I mean, I still have Steno notepads at home. Like, you know, they just, you know, spiral at the top. You just flip it over. And they literally would have one of those sitting next to the register at the front. And whoever was working the register, I mean, their job was literally anytime the door opened and somebody came in to just make a tally mark of every person that walked through the door. And they did it day by day. And eventually what the business owner did was look at that to see, okay, I've tried some new marketing stuff. I started putting an ad out there somewhere. It's the one thing they changed. You know, did we see an increase in foot traffic? You know, did we not? That was, you know, and a month later, they would look at the numbers. They would make a decision. If they did see some traffic increase, okay, great. Well, that looks like a good thing to be doing. If they didn't, well, we're not going to do that anymore. Same thing with radio ads. You know, they try radio and see, does that actually get more people in the door? And they have this person literally just putting the tally marks, you know, and they show me the pad and it's got a bunch of, you know, the four hockey sticks and then a cross line. And, you know, you start adding those up five by five and that's how they did it. It was, you know, super, super low key, no technology involved, just a number 2 pencil and a pad.
Yeah. Seeing people do that with number of phone calls too, and just volume is another pretty common thing. From a software standpoint, I would say that this is where like technology has really stepped in and made this really easy. A part of this is again, we CRM, which is customer management system, which would be a way for you to track all those engagements and conversations, which that's definitely a part of this conversation too. Just gosh, really with not a lot of effort these days, you were able to track a lot within the sales process. And again, that would also capture a lot of marketing data that would be helpful.
Yeah, particularly when a lot of your interaction with customers is online and a lot of the interaction that customers are going to have with you, at least even at the beginning of the relationship is online, so much of it can be tracked in an automated fashion of, you know, how often are they coming to your website? What pages are they looking at? Where are they navigating to from there? You know, are they responding to your website via a Facebook ad or an email? You know, are they seeing other pieces of things that are going on? Are they liking your content on social media even? I mean, there's so many different things that can be tracked and tracked easily. It's kind of creepy at times, but at the same time, if you're involved in leading a business or you're involved in marketing or sales, this is hugely valuable data that is not all that expensive to track.
Yeah, I think I messed up CRM there. Customer relation management system is what it is. Yeah. My brain stopped working for a minute. So if I messed that up the first time, there we go. We got it right.
Yeah. Acronyms are fun. Okay, so that leads us to what is number 4? What is the fourth thing that is critical that you really do when it comes to your marketing? And this one lands on understanding your limitations. You know, this is not a marketing tactic. This is not a place to go advertise. You know, this is really kind of bare bones. This is, you know, as nitty gritty as it gets, down to just really understanding what are your limitations. And so, Corey, you want to talk a little bit about just kind of the you know, thinking through what resources you may even have to begin with and how you really kind of get to that understanding.
Yeah, this is a talk that I feel like I'm fortunate to have with a lot of small business owners is as they're trying to kind of get their business up and off the ground. It's really just the question of like, well, it sounds really simple, but it's like, well, I don't know how we go to market, Gory. Can you help? How do we do this? And it's like, well, first off, yeah, if you're trying to do that on your own and run the business, there are going to be a lot of holes. So knowing your limitations is really the root of where this comes from, and understanding what you would get out of your efforts. And also understanding that if you spend time doing things related to marketing, it's going to be time that is taken away from you doing other things, which if you're a small business and you're wearing, and you're an owner and you're wearing a lot of hats, then, I mean, that's obviously time that you're not making sales or building relationships with customers or doing a myriad of other things. So understanding your limitations and what that internal resource actually is, what you should expect out of it. And I would even press a little further there to say when it would make sense for you to find an outside expert to do some of it too is key.
Yeah. Doing something yourself because it's free can actually be the costliest thing you've ever done. I think that's a critical point for anybody involved in business, and especially leadership in business, to really consider is there are things that you, as the leader in the business, you're the only person that can do that. You have to be the one to do that. There are plenty of other things that plenty of other people can go do. Make sure you're delegating enough of those things. I feel like we're getting into business consulting and not just marketing, but I don't know. I've seen so many business owners and key leaders in businesses that are, I mean, you know, they're the one responsible for making 6-figure sales to wholesale customers. And they're spending their days, instead of going out and developing those relationships with potential customers that really are going to be a game changer for the business, spending their time on Squarespace trying to figure out how to build their website. You know, it's like, I don't know that that's the best use of your time. You know, you can do so much more by developing those relationships. You know, paying somebody else to build the website and get in a good spot, but only you can go develop those relationships. That's not something you can farm out. And so it's really critical that you think through what are the things that I can do best and only I can do, and they're going to create the most return on your investment of time that you're putting into the business. And what are those things that somebody else is, you know, not just going to be able to do instead of you, but in many cases also do with more expertise, with more attention, faster and better. You know, we all have our limitations. We all have things we're good at. You know, I can do accounting. I know how to use QuickBooks. Does that mean I'm the best person to do the bookkeeping for the business? I mean, I did it in the early days because there were two of us and one of us needed to do it and we didn't have any money to hire an accountant. But I mean, I haven't done the bookkeeping in quite some time because I recognized if I'm doing that, it means I'm not doing stuff that really can make a huge difference for the business. And there are other people who can do that, who have that skill set. And quite frankly, they're way better at it than I am.
Yeah, just because you can doesn't mean that you should necessarily. It feels like I have this conversation with a lot of groups about social media is like an easy example that I can think of that. I mean, yeah, like everybody has the capability of going on Facebook and creating a post, but is that really the best thing for you to do with your time? And it's not just thinking too in terms of like, this is what I need right this minute. It's also more, I would have people think big picture and like from a strategy standpoint, like I can do this one time, but then what happens when it needs to be done again? Or what's that frequency going to look like? And are the posts going to match up? Are they going to align with our brand? There's a lot of things that would go into that if you're going to take the effort to do it that, again, I would encourage you to think more quality than quantity there.
Yeah. So just to recap where we've been, today we have been talking through what are the four most important things that, you know, this is kind of timeless stuff. It's not, you know, right this moment, but I would encourage you, take a minute, really think through these things. What are the four most important things that you can be doing for your marketing, that you can be thinking through to make sure your marketing is successful? The first one of those is know your audience. And that's something that once you know them, you don't necessarily know them forever because your audience changes. The people in your audience change. Your audience changes how they want to do things, how they respond to things. They change their attitude, their habits, the way they go about buying things. Know your audience. The second is have a solid web presence. You know, is your website one that is going to make people run because they judge you immediately for not being professional and having a website online that, you know, is outdated, it doesn't connect with people, it's got bugs in it, it's insecure, whatever it is, make sure your website is solid. It looks professional, it is professional, it speaks to that audience. The third one is make sure you have a way of tracking your return. It can be a super fancy, souped up way of doing it. It can be a steno pad and a number two pencil. But whatever you're doing, make sure that you're tracking in some way, shape, or form, what is the return you're getting on marketing, on communicating about your organization to people on the outside. And last but not least, understand your limitations. Know when it makes sense for you to do something versus going and finding an expert that can do it for possibly even less time, but where your investment in your business of doing things that only you can do really makes the most sense to do those things and let somebody else do the stuff that they can do just as well, if not better. Corey, did I miss anything?
I don't think so. You wrapped it up pretty nice there, Chris.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Corey. Thank you, listeners, for joining us. As I said at the beginning, we're going to be taking a hiatus for a few months, and we'll be back at some point to join you back on the airwaves. So thanks for listening to the Genius Podcast. That's it for today. The Ingenious Podcast team includes TJ DeLucia, Samantha Wagner, and yours truly. Our theme music was composed by Joseph McDade, and engineering support from Easy Podcast Solutions. This is Chris Manley. See you next time, everybody.